This week on The Art Beat, we're joined by Colleen O'Connor Olson, author of Mammoth Cave Curiosities, a guide to rock phobia, dating, saber-toothed tigers, and other subterranean marvels. What inspired you to write this book, Colleen?
Well, I actually started working on it nearly 20 years ago, and I was writing papers for the staff here at Mammoth Cave. I would just take a subject that pertained to Mammoth Cave, but the information was not readily available, or that it was something that I would have to dig for either through historic documents or reading academic science papers or interviewing people. And I would just get information together, and I would share it with the staff, and then other guides could work it into their programs for the public, either for cave trips or campfire programs. So originally it was four guides to share with the public. And then a few years ago I thought to myself, there are a lot of people out there interested in Mammoth Cave who would like to read this stuff, and I should make it available for the public. So I reworked the papers to make it more for just anybody who wanted to read them, and made it into a book. I wrote other books that I did write for the public to begin with, and those books I wrote as a private person. Those were Colleen, the writer who wrote those. These papers I wrote as Colleen, the National Park Service cave guide.
And I love books like this. This is exactly the kind of book when I was young I would have wanted to have if I was traveling to Mammoth Cave, so that I would know what I'm getting into. And it's delightful. I think this is just the kind of book that, you know, families would like to have if they're traveling to Mammoth Cave. A lot of interesting facts in there. You've got it's sort of a cornucopia of information. Is there any one particular thing in the book that stands out as far as information goes that people find particularly useful?
Well, you know, there's so many different things. Some stuff is useful in that it's scientific, it's historic, and other stuff I really like because it's just goofy and trivial, and I like both. I like stuff that's serious, and I like stuff that's goofy and trivial. Like, for example, one goofy thing that may not be considered important is that John Wayne came to Mammoth Cave, and his name is written on the wall, and we wondered for years, is this really John Wayne the actor, or just some guy who wrote John Wayne on the wall? And an older colleague who had worked with me, and he had been here since the 1960s, he said that when he first started, another cave guide who was here in the 1930s said, yes, that really is John Wayne. I brought him into the cave. He was just getting started in Hollywood, just starting to be famous, and I told him he could write his name on the wall, which, of course, today is completely verboten. And, you know, just interesting little things like that. And so there's a lot of just fun trivia as well as science and history.
A lot of people over the years have come to Mammoth Cave. I guess there's other stories of sort of celebrities and famous people that have come to experience this natural wonder.
Yes. Like another story about a very famous person, when Ronald Reagan came, the only person who actually came as President of the United States. The same friend who told me the John Wayne story was here when Reagan was here. And just as Reagan got off the helicopter and he got into the limousine to ride to the cave, standing next to my friend was a kid on a bicycle, and the bicycle tire blew out, and it sounded like a gunshot. And all of the Secret Service men started running toward him about to draw his guns. And my colleague is saying, it's only a bicycle tire, it's only a bicycle tire. So, of course, when you read about Reagan's visit to Mammoth Cave, it didn't mention that little story.
It's one of the oldest tourist attractions in North America, but it took a while for it to become a national park, I guess. It's not...
Yes. It was privately owned for years and years. Tours started way back in 1816, so just over 200 years ago. And, of course, at that time, it was very... You know, somebody would show up and say, hey, I heard this cave is really long. Will you take me in? So it wasn't real formal, but it was an informal tourist attraction, even 200 years ago. And by the 1830s, it had become more of a real attraction with a hotel and facilities set up for people, which is very interesting because at that time in the 1830s, even though places like New York City and Philadelphia would have had a lot of travelers, Kentucky was considered way out west at the time, and there was no railroad. You had to be on a horse-drawn vehicle, and the Green River isn't very good for transportation, so there wasn't a good riverboat system. So it was hard to get out here, but enough people came that it was fairly well known and was even well known around the world. And interestingly, even people coming from Europe who they generally would be going to Niagara Falls or, you know, things back east would come here. And I was looking in the hotel register from the 1870s, and of course by the 1870s there was a railroad and things had changed a lot. But even at that time, there were people arriving at Mammoth Cave from every continent except Africa and Antarctica. So there were people coming in from Europe, Asia, Australia, South America. So not in huge numbers like today, but the very fact that they even got here at that time is really something.
Over the years, the cave has been useful in a number of different ways as a gypsum mine. What was gypsum mined for?
Gypsum was mined back in prehistoric times. So even though we do use gypsum in modern times for drywall, it wasn't mined out in modern times. But ancient Native Americans did come in to get it, and we can see places where they scraped it off the walls. And you can even notice that on some tours today. You can see the batter marks from their tools. And what they were using it for in ancient times, we're not absolutely sure. We think maybe paint, because you can make it gypsum into paint, so that's a pretty good guess that that's what they were using it for. But the fact that they came into a dark cave, they just had torches, they didn't have nice trails, of course, like we do today, so they were climbing over the rocks with a flaming torch, battering gypsum off the walls and hauling it out, and if their torch went out, they were stuck in the dark. So this would have been a really hard job, so they must have really wanted that gypsum to go into the cave and get it.
Also, saltpeter in the War of 1812, I guess that was also useful.
Yes, yes. And if you come to the cave today, you can still see the saltpeter vats that were used to mine saltpeter to make gunpowder.
Has there been any concerns with the proposed cuts to the National Park Service?
Well, admittedly, always we've been told we don't have huge amounts of money. And, of course, that's always been the case. So it's always been be ready to do what we can with what we've got, and it's still kind of that way. It's we have what we've got, and we work our hardest to do the best with what we've got and keep on plugging away.
I understand that there is some work done or work being done to preserve the prairie, the prehistoric prairie, and maybe you can explain that.
Yes, because part of the park is in what's called Barron County. And the reason it's named that is because back in the early 1800s, when European Americans first arrived, you know, a lot of it was prairie. It was cleared land, so they called it Barron County. And a lot of it had been burned off for many, many years to make open prairie, to have better, more edible plants. So American Indians had been doing that kind of thing for a very long time. And so a lot of the area around here, even though it was probably made to be prairie, that's going back thousands and thousands of years. So areas that had for thousands of years have been prairie, some of that area has been restored to prairie again. So some of the areas now are more like what it would have been 200 years ago when people were coming by describing seeing this open prairie. And as you drive in, if you come in from the town of Park City, you will see some of that prairie. And a lot of the seeds, some seeds can survive in the seed bank for a very, very long time. So even if you have a thick forest that was allowed to grow up, quite often those prairie plant seeds are still in there and they're still viable. So when it was cleared, a lot of the plants that had been suppressed for a long time just started to grow up again, prairie flowers.
How long is the cave system? I understand it's the longest known cave system in the world.
Yes, by far. It's a little over 400 miles long, and we keep on doing exploration. It's an ongoing thing. So next time you talk to me, I might say 420 miles. Just depends on how much we keep discovering.
To that end, is that part of what you all do? You have active people who are working for the Parks Department, spelunking?
No, well, all of our people who do the exploration are all volunteers. So there are a lot of Park Service people who do enjoy exploration, but if we do it, we have to do it as volunteers on our day off, totally separate from our paid jobs. So nobody gets paid to do exploration, all volunteers. And the volunteers who do it are with a group called Cave Research Foundation, and they are so dedicated. I know cavers who have been doing the exploration since the 1950s. And, of course, those people are now in their 80s, so they're not doing the really tough stuff anymore, but they're still coming to these expeditions and still helping out in whatever way they can, and that's dedication.
How far in the cave have you ventured?
I am going to estimate I've covered maybe 30 to 40 miles, and that, of course, is just a little bit of 400. So I like to go caving, but admittedly, I'm kind of a lightweight. I'm not hardcore. I really enjoy caving, but everywhere I've been, somebody has been before me. So when I squeeze into a tight belly crawl, I know that I'm going to pop out soon. But if you're doing the initial exploration and you're part of the very first party in there, you don't know how long you're going to be squeezing or if you're going to wiggle up to a pit or a dead end or what you're going to come across.
This is not for someone who's claustrophobic, I assume.
That's right. Caving is not for claustrophobics.
Although I will say I've been to Mammoth Cave, and there are many different tours you can take. And,
oh, yeah.
And certainly you can go and visit the cave, and you don't have to necessarily get any, because it's quite large in many of the spaces.
Definitely, definitely. So the exploration I'm describing, that's going into places where no human has been before, and these are the very first people checking it out. When you come on a cave tour, we are, and on most tours anyway, walking on nice trails. We have handrails. I turn on the lights. So even though cave tours can be strenuous because we are walking and we're going up and down hills, we are walking on trails. Now, if you do want to come as a visitor and you want to get a little taste of real caving, even though you won't be on an expedition discovering brand new areas, you can take our wild cave tour or introduction to cave tour, and we do crawl around and climb, and you do get a taste of what real caving is.
I thought it was interesting. I was looking around in the book, and there's apparently there was some competition early on before 1941, before it was established as a national park, where you had competing tours, and some of them not as advertised, I guess.
Well, at that time, there were a lot of show caves, and there still are today. Today, it's friendly competition. And, of course, now a lot of the caves and other tourist attractions, we all realize people come to the area to see all the cool stuff. And the more cool stuff there is to see, the more people like it. But back in the early 20th century, a lot of people saw it as, uh-oh, if you go to Mammoth Cave, you're not coming to my private show cave. And so the competition was not always friendly back in the old days. And I did talk to some people who worked at the caves back in the 1950s. And by the 1950s, it had calmed down quite a bit. But they told me some stories about how there was more competition back then, and that sometimes there'd be little small fibs about whether or not other caves are open or where you should go. And they would station people along the road to stop cars, and then that employee of whatever cave they worked for would try to get you to go to whatever cave they worked for. But nowadays, if you show up at Mammoth Cave or any of the other local caves, we try to help people out tell them other fun places that they can go see, too.
Now, for the young archaeologist, there's probably somewhere in the cave some fossils and things like that to see?
There are some fossils. And admittedly, sometimes they're hard to see because you have to know what to look for. And sometimes they're in places where you're with a big group walking along, so I cannot necessarily always point them out depending on how many people are in the group. But if you take the domes and dripstones tour, you do walk by a lot of fossilized coral. You just have to look for it, but it's embedded in the rock.
It seems like Mammoth Cave is probably one of those places that it takes more than just an afternoon to really explore it and enjoy it.
Yes. And you can enjoy it in an afternoon. You can come by in an afternoon, take one trip, have a great time, or you could stay several days, go on several cave tours, go hiking in the woods, go canoeing. So you can make it a quick day trip, or you can make it a whole week-long adventure, depending on what kind of time you have and how much you want to do. And of course, what time of year it is, too. In the summer, we have a lot more going on than we do this time of year.
Still a lot of creatures living in Mammoth Cave.
A lot compared to other caves. Not a lot compared to the surface, because, of course, most critters like deer and other surface animals don't like caves. But Mammoth, as far as cave animals go, does have a lot. There's cave crickets, beetles, different species of eyeless fish, eyeless crawdads down in the river. So a cave is a tough environment because there's no plants growing. So the animals that live there, they've got to be adapted to live in a tough environment. What visitors are most likely to see are cave crickets. Occasionally we see wood rats. Once in a while, bats. So sometimes we do see cave critters in the cave, but not always. It's just like walking in the woods. It just depends on how lucky you are.
I know you've written a whole other book on the ghosts of Mammoth Cave. And is there a quick story that you can share on that that might be something that people find fascinating?
There's a lot of stories about the cave, and I think the reason why the cave is so ripe for ghost stories is because ghost stories, of course, always take place at night and in the dark. They hardly ever take place on a bright, sunny day. And, of course, the cave is dark all the time, so it's like night all the time. And also, because there's 200 years of recorded history, plus thousands of years going back to ancient people coming through, that lends itself to it, too. And just one story out of many is this was told to me by a fellow cave guide years ago who was on a cave tour. She was trailing that day. It was her job to be in the back to make sure everything was okay, and her partner, who was leading the tour, was going to have her turn out the lights so people could experience total darkness. So my friend was standing away from the group by the light switch, and she turned out the lights, and it was in a part of the cave that's been toured since the early 1800s where guides who were slaves used to take people through. And as she was standing there in the dark, she felt something push her. And she thought that somebody, as a joke, had moved away from the group and was back there with her. And she turned on her little flashlight, but nobody was there. And she always felt like it was the ghost of an ancient guide who was there just letting her know that he was there. And so she always felt like his presence was in the cave. And other people have told me similar stories where they felt somebody touch them when there was nobody around, or they heard a voice or saw a figure when there was nobody around.
Yeah, that brings chills just thinking about it. But that's a good kind of ghost. I mean, I'd much rather have an experience like that than something nefarious. I'm glad to know that there's some friendly spirits down there.
Oh, and another, yeah, and the stories I hear are pretty good. Like, for example, another one, the story of Floyd Collins, which, to make a long story short, was a man who was trapped in another cave near Mammoth Cave back in the 1920s and died. And, of course, that story in itself lends itself to scariness. A friend who does cave exploration was in the cave one day near parts where Floyd Collins had explored back in the 1920s, and she tripped and started to fall off of a big ledge. But she felt somebody grab her and pull her back, and at first she thought it was her caving companion, and she was about to thank him for saving her from falling, but her companion was standing way on the other side of the passageway. So instead of saying, "Thanks, Richard," to her caving friend, she said, "Thanks, Floyd," because
wow,
she always thought that Floyd Collins saved her that day. So that's a happy ghost story.
That is a happy ghost story. Yeah, I like those. Rock phobia, is that a real thing?
Well, understandably, when people go in the cave, they're often worried about rocks falling on them. And I can see why that's a fear, because we're surrounded by rock. There's rock all over our head. And even though, of course, rocks can fall, it's not impossible. There is gravity. Gravity pulls on everything. It never stops. But rock fall in the cave is not as common as what you would think, because above ground, the reason why branches are falling a lot is because it's rainy, it's windy. There's a lot of stuff to make things fall above ground. Down underground, we're not getting all that weather. And that's why rock fall is not very common. So I never say never. Gravity does pull. But without all the weather, all the storms going on that we have above ground, you're more likely to have a branch fall and hit you while walking in the woods than you are to have a rock fall and hit you inside the cave. So that's why I cover rock phobia, because it is something that scares people, but really isn't that scary.
I know there's many, many stories in here, and we don't want to, you know, we want people to read the book itself, so we don't want to give away too many stories, but can you explain what the significance of the original Twinkie is in its relation to Mammoth Cave?
The reason I throw in Twinkies is because gypsum is used in food products, and for years it was in Twinkies, and if you read the label on a box of Twinkies, it said calcium sulfate. That's what gypsum is. And it's used in a lot of other food products as well. So years ago, I contacted the Hostess company, and I said, "Why is there gypsum in Twinkies and other Hostess products?" And they told me it makes the batter light and fluffy. And then, you know, a few years ago, the original Hostess went bankrupt, and now there's a new Hostess. And if you read the Twinkie label today, it no longer says calcium sulfate. Now, some other Hostess products do, but not Twinkies. So I tried to contact Hostess again to say, how come Twinkies no longer have gypsum? And they never got back with me. So it's one of the great mysteries of the world, why Twinkies no longer have gypsum.
Of course, it wouldn't necessarily mean that it was mined from Mammoth Cave.
No. It was never brought out of Mammoth Cave in modern times or for food gypsum. Most food-grade gypsum is brought out of Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
A little gypsum trivia for you there.
Well, they have caves in Oklahoma, too?
I, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's gypsum that is forming on the surface. I don't think they're getting it out of caves.
This book is filled with all kinds of great information to get people excited about visiting the cave. And it is a natural wonder. It's also, is it the state's only national park? Is that right?
No. Cumberland Gap is a national park as well. And then also there's Lincoln's Birthplace, which is a national historic site.
But this is a World Heritage Site, which is...
It is, yes.
Colleen O'Connor Olson has been guiding tours at Mammoth Cave National Park for over 20 years. Her new book is called Mammoth Cave Curiosities, A Guide to Rock Phobia, Dating, Saber-Toothed Tigers, and Other Subterranean Marvels, newly published by University Press of Kentucky. Thank you for listening. I'm Joe Conkright for The Art Beat on WUKY.